the lady
in Texas.
In Texas, correct. A person who I felt went with dignity. Mm-hmm. She could not escape her fate. She'd come to understand Christianity and religion.
Mm-hmm.
And she, you know, never fought against the accepted role she was to play for her final moments of life.
Mm-hmm.
And even the Pope asked for clemency. But yet all the way to the very end where they finally gave her the injection, she had a smile and dignity and went with grace.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was a very valuable lesson for many people.
Correct. But lastly, and this is the last statement, look at what she did. Look what troubles she had caused and what harm she had caused. For a religious leader to interfere in another country's code of ethics is wrong. Even though it was done with a good heart and good intent, it is interference. Thank you. Frank, a Moore's dissertation on interference. Where have I heard that before?
It could be placed actually among the Hades Bays and Ashtar Command's ideas on interference in the same way the Pope interfered.
Mm-hmm.
The better thing would be the Pope not to interfere, much as Hades Bays and Ashtar Command don't interfere.
Well, we try hard not to interfere. I mean, you could say that our discussion right now is interference.
Because people choose to listen or they do not listen.
Uh-huh. Okay. Let me put on the next speaker.
Okay.
Yo.
Yo.
Hello. I couldn't get my voice quite right for Kiri. How are you doing?
Good, Mother. Well, I already knew you were coming anyway.
Yes, I know.
Well, the point is that in a similar fashion, the Pope asking for her to be pardoned,
mm-hmm,
is the same way as Ashtar Command asking, you know, basically interfering, which they don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And in our discussions, it could be called interference, but people listen or not. And the same way the Pope asking, people, you know, go, well, the Pope asked, well, no biggie. Or a lot of people say, wow, the Pope really has. It's their choice.
Yes, but if you look at it, and I see what Amol is trying to say, I don't actually agree with what he said. But then I'm just a mere sixth-dimensional woman as opposed to a seventh-dimensional person.
Yeah, neither one of us had got, you know, mm-hmm, the ideas from that point of view.
Correct. But, yeah, the Pope showing compassion and caring about the lady that was executed,
right,
in my opinion, is commendable. And whether or not anyone listened does show caring. I'm trying to understand why Amol would say it was interference. And the only way I could see it was that basically he is sticking his hand into the laws of another country.
Well, he's not, because, you know, they're not going to be, you know, they're not listening to the Pope as saying, well, this guy is interfering, because that's not, you know, he's not an authority that can actually sit there and interfere. All he can do is offer his own opinion. And they can, the judges or whatever.
I don't know. I don't know how it goes. Let's talk about something different.
Okay.
Let's talk about different consciousnesses, different ways of thinking.
Okay.
That seems to be the topic of tonight. Looking at the way you think and I think, as opposed to the way Amol thinks. Amol tends to see things on a much bigger scale and a much smaller scale, which is very hard and contradictory in my opinion. And you can't look at both the little picture and the big picture at the same time. It is fascinating to see Amol's thought processes on how he addresses situations and how he uses phraseology and the construction of that phraseology. Now, the analogies and the parables that he draws.
Well, do you think possibly that it is that each dimension you see a bigger picture from the smaller pictures that are presented to you?
I don't know, huh?
Okay, well, look, you see through my eyes much of what I see.
Mm-hmm.
You've lived third-dimensional lives as I do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know exactly how I view life from the smaller pictures with a small glimpse of the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you, on the other hand, living in sixth dimension, you see more of the smaller picture, but you also see a lot of the bigger picture in a larger extent than I do. For one thing, you have access to your past lives. Your mind thinks quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So what's that take to the next level then?
To the next level, I don't know. I have the lacking in information to be able to come up with a clear answer. If I said, I think, that is just thinking. It is lacking concrete evidence.
All right, let's take some evidence. Okay. Let's take Sananda.
Okay.
Now, Sananda chose to go through a short lifetime of some 33 years to teach and in the end present a grander lesson than had been presented before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Could we then say that Sananda saw the bigger picture, which includes even today, what is going on from that act? Do you think that he, from that higher dimensional point of view he was at before he went down to third dimension, saw to this point what would go on, or only the big picture to that point?
I don't know, for two reasons. One, I'm not an eighth or a ninth or a tenth dimensional being. And for two, I'm not Sananda.
No.
I can say I think possibly, maybe, I can say all those things. And it is my point of view on Sananda. Amol is concurring with me. He's saying that it is wrong when dealing with a situation or a person that is shown and taught that much to sit in conjecture is just adding to the myths, stories, and legends. But I know what you're trying to say.
I like to think he did. In my opinion.
Mm-hmm. You can think what you want.
Yes, I know. But it's a neat scenario.
Yes, it is. It is. But yeah, by me saying that I think I feel, when I don't know Sananda, I've met him as many times as you have. Actually, I've met him three times. I don't know Sananda. So for me to make a comment about somebody of that importance that I've only met three times, how can I do that and come up with the facts? You're talking about myths and stories or somebody that you've only met twice, all cobbled together. What is true and what is not true? I've heard a lot about them. All second or third or fourth hand information. From that is everybody's point of view. So I can't say.
True, but the opposite. Right. But the opposite to that statement is the fact that he was just throwing dice.
Maybe he was.
Maybe he was.
Who knows?
Who knows? Right. What's interesting, though, is though he went from the higher dimension that he was at, mm-hmm. came down to the third dimension, and I'm seeing him among these gentlemen that he's brought together who look up to him, and he's teaching them. Mm-hmm. Peter, Paul, Matthew, John, and so on.
Luke, Mark.
Correct.
Judas.
Uh-huh. And he's actually talking to these gentlemen in a third dimensional realm, much as you do to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, to be able to do that for him must have been just an incredible experience.
It must have been. Let us look at it from a different point, a different angle.
Okay.
Okay. I'm a sixth dimensional being. You're a third dimensional being.
Right.
He is temp. Okay. The thought processes that we go through are totally different. I think faster than you do.
Mm-hmm.
I have access to my past lives.
Right.
I can work out things quicker in my mind. Okay. Let us look at Sinan. And this is totally projection and totally my opinion. It's not based in general fact. It is my opinion.
Okay.
Obviously, to me, he thinks faster than I do. He has access to all his past lives. He has perfect recall of those past lives. My opinions from those past lives. But he has, or not his opinions from those past lives, he has, by closing his eyes, can actually experience the life as it was. And he can play it through his mind, a whole entire life, all the thoughts, feelings, emotions, points of view, all of that, in the space of, because in my opinion, that he thinks faster, he could probably experience a whole entire life in maybe 5 minutes. Now, being able to do that for many, many past lives, may be able to see patterns where he is not looking into the past, but into the future, seeing all these possible outcomes and how each emotional status and each emotional behavior is going to affect further down the line by being able to experience not only his past life, but the group consciousness of the planet that he is from or the planet that he has chosen to visit, will be able to see how his emotions and behaviors of people interact in a way to affect the future. Now, the faces may be the same. I don't know. He could actually be seen into the future by looking at the most likely outcomes.
So you're saying, and this is only my opinion, Sananda's an artist. Sananda has a canvas in front of him. The picture he started has got these swirls and colors and forms that he started.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of the canvas is blank. But he can project how the rest of that canvas is going to look by which brushstrokes he's going to make here and how they're going to interrelate to these other strokes he's going to make later on.
I don't know, huh?
But if that's true, and it's only conjecture in our opinion, my opinion anyway, then isn't that true for all of us? We're all artists. We all have our own canvases that we're creating upon.
I don't know, huh? And here is pointing at your recording device.
Okay.
And saying that as we have three more speakers, I've got to cut it short.
Well, we had another good note.
I don't know.
Thank you, my fellow artist.
Let me go and find a bottle of Claret. Okay. Sorry. Hey. Okay. Next speaker.
Okay.
Yo.
Yo, Kiri.
Okay. Any questions for me?
Nothing but the obvious.
Okay, what is the obvious?
The artist question.
No, not going to answer it. They want to play.
Okay.
And due to the fact that the last two speakers are probably going to take up some time, I shall be off. Besides, I have to go and act on some hormones.
Have fun, my dear.
Oh, I will. Great. Okay. Let me put on the second from last speaker.
Okay.
Catch you later. Hello.
Hello, dear.
How's it going?
Good, my dear. Yourself?
Good. Excellent.
I'm glad to hear that, dear.
Mm-hmm. It's nice having my little sister around for extra time.
I am happy for you, too.
Uh-huh. Okay. What are we to talk about?
Well, I suppose I should probably get off the subject I'm working on, because that'll just take up too much time. But,
how much time do you have on your recording device?
Oh, I've got more than half a tape.
Okay, so we do have...
I've got about probably, looks like 30 minutes, maybe.
Okay.
Theoretically.
Mm-hmm. Theoretically. Okay, theoretical mind exercises for increasing thought actions. Kara got me thinking about that.
Okay.
Being an engineer, I have to do a lot of skull work. And how that works for me. Okay. Skull work is where I take a problem and I try to work it through in my mind to see how it will go. For example, let us say I have to construct a replica of an arm, okay?
Replica of what?
A replica of an arm. Syrian arm.
Okay.
Okay. How would I do it? How would it work? Well, yeah, by applying pressure here and here to make it move like this. How do I do that? How do you make that work? And what I do to help in the thought process is, first of all, I go and read on, the arm. What does it look like? I pull up hollows of the muscle structure, the bone structure, and I will strip it down to its barest essence of just the bone, and then I will add in things. Now, having seen how this works, I won't get the hologram to manipulate it, make it move. I will try to figure out how it moves, why it moves, and what muscles do what to make it move. Now, here's the entertaining part. Having figured out how this part, the upper arm and the lower arm, work together to make it to do this, to bend. Okay, now for the replica that I'm making, the robotic replica of a Syrian arm. You've got to do the fingers. How do you do the fingers? How do you make them move the way that they do? Now, I've only looked at this part. This is where it gets hard and entertaining, if you call it entertainment. What I do, did I make its body move completely there? Okay, what I do is I would make miniature replicas of the fingers. or not the fingers, of the arm as fingers and connect them all together. Yes, this is something I have done. I made a robotic arm years ago.
How does this have to do with the mental processes?
Well, because the first part is visual. This part is done in here. I have to work out how to make these puppies work. Now, constructing it is part of the mental process because you have to know where things are going to go. You have to have a pre-planned idea, whether it is written down or held in your mind or stored as images, is all controlled from here. You have to make the decisions. And in building it, you have to... After what? You have to look at the images or decide where things go. So that is done mentally, which takes reasoning. If you were to, let's say, connect this muscle to here, it's not going to do this, is it? Because this muscle here has to tighten as this muscle loosens. I'm having difficulty with your language tonight. You might have noticed that. Where do you attach the muscle to make it do that? If you attach it here and here, you can make it as tense as you want. And with the one here and here, you can make it as loose as you want. It's not going to do anything. So what do? You have to attach it in the correct places, which is done by making the correct decisions in your mind, by doing the correct research and trying to figure things out.
And to see it all in your mind as one piece with all the interconnecting parts once you have it all figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Before it ever takes any physical form.
Correct. That is part of increasing the thought processes, is practicing to be able to see it in your mind. And to be able to hold it in your mind, look at it, spin it, rotate it, turn it, and think through each process.
Now apply that to life, and what do you get?
That's the next stage.
Right.
Let us get back to the robotic arm.
Okay.
What uses would a robotic arm do?
Well, it'd work in a hazardous environment for uses where you could not use a regular arm.
Mm-hmm.
For example, in microengineering or mm-hmm. just regular nuclear or biological mm-hmm. work where a regular arm might be destroyed using it.
Correct.
But you need the tactile senses or the ability to use the digital qualities of an arm
mm-hmm.
to manipulate the pieces that you're working with.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Now, having constructed your artificial arm, your robotic arm, you have to think of what uses as you've just pointed out. Now, the next stage from that, because you have to think, okay, what's the next stage from the uses?
Are we using tactile senses, though, with those arms, or just a dead arm?
Well, it's a nonsensical arm at this point, let's say. It's a dead arm. It has no senses.
Okay.
The next stage is, okay, how do we improve it and make it do what it's supposed to do?
Tactile senses.
Correct. Now, having been able to get the tactile senses, how do we improve that?
Attach it to your brain.
Correct.
So that you have the input that you need to make the correct decision based on the tactile senses that you receive from those particular nerves or receptors.
Mm-hmm. But let us say that you are dealing with radioactive material. You can't go in there with your robotic arm and just pick it up and move around because radiation is going to make your body decay, correct? It's going to become radioactive.
Doesn't matter, it's a robotic arm.
Yes, but you're saying that it's attached to you.
From a set of leads that you're in a safe room.
Okay, now we're getting somewhere. How is it attached?
Well, it's attached in the way that your helmets are able to input any thought, through a helmet system where it's attached to your brain.
Mm-hmm.
You have the leads going into your helmet.
Okay, and it's attached to your brain. How's it attached to your brain?
Assess your brain. It's attached to your brain through the helmet. The leads go into your helmet, so you're able to use the arm and feel the senses as if it was your real arm.
Okay, how?
Well, now see, the helmets, we're getting into a whole technological area that Kiri hasn't quite made common knowledge to me just as yet.
And for a very good reason.
Well, yeah, correct. I mean, I can make a number of hazardous guesses about
how it
works.
Okay, let's hear your hazardous guesses.
Well, the hazardous guesses I have is that the probes that are inserted in the brain once you have the helmet on attach themselves to various parts of your brain that have to do with motor control, sensory functions, endorphin, and so on, releasing of various chemicals in your body. And so therefore, one of the leads or many of the leads coming in from the arm would have to attach to the probe that directly affects or directly receives sensory input.
So you're saying that you think that the helmet actually penetrates into the skull, through the skull into the brain.
Correct.
Hmm.
And you'd have to have some leads that went from sensory input to the brain and others that went to motor control in the brain so you could control the actual arm movement going on.
Oh, I'd love to talk to Kiri about this, but I don't think they work that way.
Yeah, I could say it. Kiri's not been real open-minded about sharing all this information with me.
Probably for a reason.
Of course, I'm all a fire little tush.
Mm-hmm. So
under pain of having Kiri's tush fried, I have to make these radical hazardous guesses.
Hmm. And
I know that I'm fairly well right because I've been to points where they've had helmets taken off, and unfortunately, they left rather nasty little pinpricks afterwards,
mm-hmm.
where they were taken off suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming they do pierce the skin.
And I think it's safe to say that they do pierce the skin. As for the skull, I don't think so.
Maybe not the skull.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
But how they get through the sensory inputs through the skull to the brain itself without actually going through the skull, I just assume is possibly...
I've got Tia looking at me very concerned.
I can imagine we're deep in the gray areas now.
Mm-hmm. And I think...
You start making hazardous guesses, then we're both in trouble.
It would be best if I'm lip reading here. If I...
Drop the bloody subject.
If I... Oh, let it go. Okay.
Same team.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. Tea
was going. Okay. She says if you want... So she can go and get Kiri. So,
No, I've already worn a helmet. I already know what they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you see that by what we've just done.
Right.
We've done the mind exercise.
Right.
Now, the thing is, how to construct the helmet.
Oh, Kiri. T is going, drop.
No. I'm taking it as a mental exercise.
Okay. How do we construct the helmet?
Yes, this is... And I'm not going to... I'm going to tell you how to go through the thought processes. Okay. First of all, you visualize the outer shell.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You visualize and think about what you want it to do. Okay. You want it to control an object.
I want to receive images and sensory input and control the object.
Correct. Okay. I was going to get to that before you so politely interrupted.
My mistake.
Okay. You have it doing what you have said. Okay. How do you get it to do that without causing irreversible harm?
Well, it has to act as a...
No, yeah. I don't interrupt. I'm leaving deliberate pauses.
Sorry.
Okay. How do you get to do that without causing harm? how do you achieve that goal? And finally, which sukha do you get to be the test pilot? All very important processes in the thought process. Even before you build it, you have to know how you're going to build it, how it's going to work, what it's going to do. Because it's no good building something with no idea on what it's going to do. No idea on how it works. What's the point of doing it if you don't know that? You see? So how do you do these things? So you have to, when you're doing a thought exercise, is you see the end product and how it's going to look without seeing the internal mechanisms. You think about how you're going to build the mechanism. What materials are you going to need? How are you going to construct it? What's its function? How are you going to achieve that function in the safest possible way? And who are you going to get to test it? Because it's useful to have the test pilot from the get-go. Because if you're going to build it, you want to custom make it so it fits snugly for them to start off with. Then you can mass produce it from there.
In essence, let's take this cycle over here in front of me.
Okay.
All right, I'm sure you see on the monitor, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right, someone had to know what exactly they wanted to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
They had it in their mind, probably without the shell, they just had the basic, you know, function of what each item was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the end product figured out what it was going to do.
Mm-hmm.
From there, they had to construct each internal mechanism that would make it do the mm-hmm. end product.
Mm-hmm.
Once they had that down, then they had to figure out the external parts that would make the internal parts that would come up to the final function that they were talking about.
Well, the fine, from what I see on it, is it's basically a lever like this way, with a lever across, swinging bars, and a bar on the bottom.
Right.
Okay. Pivots, ratchets, and so on. Very primitive, very simple. The bars from the top with the loop arm and down and across are all cosmetic. You can do away with it. It's cosmetics. But cosmetics are pleasing to the eye. So you have to factor in how to use the cosmetics for a function. You have to stand on them and use them as levers.
Well, as with the robotic arm, first off, you have to see the end product. Before you can do that, the end product is all cosmetics.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to start with a framework.
Correct. When I say the end products, I don't include cosmetics.
Right.
Yeah, I see the end product as...
Well, I see it with cosmetics. I see it with flesh, flesh color, fingernails.
That's unimportant. That's cosmetics.
That's the end product, though, I see.
Yeah. That's not my end product. My end product is creating the arm and make it function. Make it work as I want it to work. What you do with it after that is up to you. If you throw flesh, slap some paint on it, put fingernails on there, fine, but I've done my job, which is creating a mechanism that works. However, if the cosmetics interfere and make it so it doesn't work, then I get involved again. Okay. Anything else? Okay. And off she bounces. Out of the bamboo. Good. Okay. Last person. Hello.
Hi there,
Ben. Hey, how's it going?
Good, darling. Very educational.
Uh-huh. Very educational.
You, my dear, are the one person who
will certainly be able to understand what we just did. It's us in this fight more than anybody else, I think.
What makes you think that? Yes, I am. I'm also a medical student.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What do you want to know?
How to apply the thought processes that your sister was so apt in discussing and using them to create your life.
Okay, so we're going to start with the hard questions first. Fine.
You want fun and frilly? We'll go fun and frilly first.
Whatever you want. I was actually going to make some comments. How do you do it?
Hard questions first.
Okay, how do you do it? Or how do I do it? Well, you're not going to like this answer.
I'll take it.
I take things from the past, analyze it, and work out how it worked in the past, and it should work the same way in the future. What I know as was, I apply it to what is. You understand?
Mm-mm. Because it doesn't always work that way. Because it did it one time, this means it can do it again.
No, but it's a place to start from. And I think you don't understand what I just said, do you?
No, but I sure would like elucidation on
this. Okay, what do you think I said?
That you look at, what's taken on in the past, which could be a number of things, past lives, past experiments, past lessons, and then you apply them to what you're working on in the future.
Okay, it's actually past lives. I access my past lives, compare to see if I've had any experience with it in the past, the ones that I have access to, and apply it to, okay, I know it works this way. Okay, I have, let us say, I take a healing where I'm fixing bones. Okay, I've broken up. There's arms seem to be the flavor of the moment. Okay, I'm fixing it up. I know if I put a splint on it and wrap a gauze with a mixture of hardening materials, that I can create a cast to protect the arm and therefore make the bones knit together. I look at all those experiences that I've had and see all the ways that it's been done, that I've done it. I see which ones are more successful than others, and I do that for the first try. If it doesn't work, then I go to another one and another one until I find one that works. Let's say I've done six of them in my past lives. Okay, I try all six and none of them work. Then I start improvising and refining and using techniques a little from one, a little from another, until I come across one that does work. The fact that I'm doing this, I know that I've done it before. So you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Now let's take something a little different. Mental mind probes and understanding how my actions and manipulations can help to heal and use my mind preps. For example, last night, you want to hear all about it?
Give me the details,
babe. Okay. One person that I absolutely loved and adore, and a young lady that was involved in the past life, the recent past life, to work out a karmic hostility problem, had to join in an intimate way. Now, this is the first time that I've ever, even in my past lives that I have access to, and that's the key word, have access to, I have ever done it. First time. And in doing so, I learned several things. For example, I can't watch the auras and probe their minds at the same time to see their sexual readiness. I can see the fact that they're sexually aroused, but whether or not it's focused at me or at each other is very difficult to determine by just looking at the auric appearances. Being able to penetrate under their natural mental shields to the selected area to implant thoughts and to read the thoughts to be able to react in a particular way. I can't do that whilst I'm in the visual auric mode. I have to change modes. So I had to learn to decide which was better to use. Which do you think is better to use?
The auric fields.
No. Because it's unfocused.
The other one is in appearance, though.
Not quite.
You talk about implanting thoughts.
Coercion.
In appearance.
It's a positive way of using coercion in a...
okay.
In a healing process. Okay. The possible outcomes of the hostility is that it got worse and created problems. Serious, not only psychological, but physical problems, because one of the parties is so passive and the other is so aggressive.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're looking at a karmic problem here where two people had to join to overcome a karmic problem to get the ball rolling. Okay. Neither of them were willing to do so. Neither of them were willing, and it has to be done at a young age.
Well, I talked to both of them. I understand your problem quite nicely.
Yes. So it has to be done at an early age so that the outcomes are beneficial for a longer period of time, which evens up and works out the karmic problem. So I have to implant thoughts to push it in the right direction. They're not commands. They're implanted thoughts that they can act upon freely or ignore freely. They recognize them as their own thoughts, but their own belief systems will manipulate whether or not they actually do it. So it's not a command. It is a thought. I'm not telling them, kiss Laika. Kiss Leah. That is not what I'm telling them to do. I am suggesting. I am giving them options. One of the things that, whilst I was inserting thought processes and giving ideas, is I lost sensation of my sexual urges. When I finally got them to stop using me and stop trying to satisfy me because they couldn't, because I no longer was interested, my body was sexually aroused, but it wasn't responding. When I finally got them to respond sexually to each other, then things for them started to happen. By putting the first steps into action and getting them to make love has set the rest of the things in action. They're now more freer of their dislike for each other. They now are acting upon the attraction that was there, and that they were strongly sexually attracted to each other because of the past life that they shared. By letting them use me as a testing ground for how far they could go, benefited them, not me. But yeah, being what I am, which is, I think you would say, strongly promiscuous. Thank you. And having a very healthy sex drive helped them. So I'm using my sexual self as a healing tool of a karmic problem. Now, I know where my sister headed off to. I know that because I went in whilst Amol was talking and came back. I know that Laika is there waiting for her. I am pretty sure that they are starting to, they're probably smooching at the moment. I'm also working with a another medical student that is on the base that's a eighth year engineering medic on a few little ideas that I have. Okay, do you have any questions?
So you feel satisfied that your work is almost done?
Almost done. There's one last thing that I have to do. Satisfied? No, I wasn't. Because I'm going to have to tinker with it from time to time because I think that they may not go all the way that they should. But that's